Morning, my name's Matt. I have the privilege of being the minister here at Maybridge. If we haven't met, and if you're new, you're visiting, you're a guest, it is really lovely to have you with us. Now, I've been at Maybridge for a little while now. I love being part of Maybridge. Does anybody else love being part of Maybridge? I thought one person would go. So that's good. I've been here for a while, though. I've been here 9 years, would you believe? Some people probably, if you've been here all that time, you probably think, oh, it feels a lot longer than that. But for the first week I came to Maybridge 9 years ago, and I basically didn't know anybody really at all. And I came along on a Sunday evening to the sixth service, okay? And I saw somebody, and this is somebody who's no longer at Maybridge, let me just be clear. I saw somebody sat on their own on the back row. And I thought, okay, well, maybe they're new as well. I don't know. So I thought, I'm going to go and sit next to them, and I'll introduce myself and have a chat with them. So I went over, and I introduced myself, and then we sat down. And this person very quickly was clearly not interested in speaking to me at all. It was very obvious. I thought, okay, that's fine. That happens. Anyway, then the service began a couple of moments later. During the first song, I noticed this person was very slowly edging away from me. So I started checking, do I smell? Like, what's going on here? After about three songs, we sat down, and this person was now a full chair further away from me, which was made very conspicuous by the fact that their coat was still on the back of the chair in between us. That wasn't a very good welcome, was it? What a great example of what church is not supposed to be like. Anyway, this is week two of what we call Partnership Month at Maybridge. Last week, I spoke about how the main thing is following Jesus before anything else at all. We partner with him. But this week, we're talking about how we partner together as church. And it's really about how who we are is inseparable from who God is. There is no such thing historically or in the Bible as a Christian who is not a committed part of a wider community of Christians. There's no such thing. And I want to look at how this comes out through a particular passage. This is from Ephesians 2 in the New Testament. This was written by a bloke called Paul. It's a letter to a church about church, basically. And it's there to tell us who we are. And this is just an amazing bit of this letter. Let me read it to you. For through him, meaning Jesus, we both have access to the Father by one Spirit. Consequently, you are no longer foreigners and strangers, but fellow citizens with God's people and also members of his household, built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets, with Christ Jesus himself as the chief cornerstone. In him, the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple in the Lord. And in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. Very wordy little passage, isn't it? Now, the first thing, the context. The passage right before this was all about how Jesus makes peace between us and God. That's absolutely foundational. That's ground zero. In the bedrock of Christian theology, you've got to have that in place. But then Paul says, consequently, what I'm about to say naturally follows from what I've just said. What he will tell us is not the bonus extra DVD material. It's not a nice add-on to a relationship with God. It naturally follows. Because we are connected to the Father, consequently, we are connected to each other. And we have no choice. But it's a good thing. It's a bit like this. Here's a little bit of a map of the London Underground. And you can see King's Cross is at the centre. I chose that station on purpose. And loads of other little stations are connected to it. Now, you cannot be connected to King's Cross without being connected to the others. It's not possible. You know, Russell Square and Barbican are not naturally connected. But because they're both connected to King's Cross, they can't not be. An underground station on its own, unconnected, living its best life, doing its own thing, disconnected from any other underground stations would be what? Completely useless. They're meant to be connected, aren't they? They don't make any sense on their own. And so that's why we are no longer foreigners and strangers to each other. Now, at Maybridge, we're an increasingly multicultural church, and so in a literal sense, many of us kind of are foreigners and maybe strangers to each other at first. We're from different places, many of us. And in the first century, those distinctions were a bigger deal than they are even now. Where you were from was who you were. If you were Jewish, that was your primary identity. If you were a Samaritan, that was your primary identity, and so on. And then within that, you'd have people from your own village. And then it was even more than that, your own family. And the norm was to regard people who were other than you as more distant. You know, they're not from your village, they're not from your family. You know, you keep them more at arm's length in general. They're not your people. But Jesus changed it. Now, with him, you're part of a new people, which includes those from a family or a town or even a nation very different to your own. Now, probably in the days before you were a Christian, you had family and loved ones. Absolutely, you probably still do. But now, if you're a Christian, you're in a different sort of relationship with God's people. And I can't underline enough how much this was an identity more than it was an activity. So identity more than activity. Being a Christian is not like joining the squash club or getting Fit Four membership, where you can kind of jump in and out as you please. This is permanent and it's meaningful. Like it or not, and sometimes you probably don't like it, other Christians are your people. Look around the room. Yes, these are your people. Now in the passage, Paul uses two ideas, two descriptions to explain this, and people would have understood what he meant at the time. Firstly, he says, your fellow citizens. Now, in the first century, it was quite a great thing to be a Roman citizen. If you were a Roman citizen, you had certain privileges, legal protections, property rights, tax breaks, higher social status. And so lots of people who were not a citizen wanted to be. It was quite a helpful thing. But certain things were expected of citizens too. Obeying the laws, being loyal to Rome, being a good contributor to society. And when Paul talks about other Christians being fellow citizens, everybody who heard him would have had an idea of what it meant to be a citizen in their mind. A strong image, it's belonging, it's behaviour, it's beliefs, it's being in it with other people. And Paul's saying there is something that happens when you follow Jesus that is like Roman citizenship, but even more so. If you're a Christian, you're automatically a privileged, trusted part of something. But secondly, he says you're a member of his household. Now, this is even stronger. The household was the first place of belonging. It meant that, you know, the nuclear sort of biological family, but also any other associated people were part of it, perhaps some slaves and servants as well. And the household was understood to be absolutely critical to the success of society. Everybody believed that. They had beliefs about all sorts of other things, but everybody thought the household has to be solid. We can't mess with it. It's a really good thing. And family bonds were the closest thing that there were. You'd be completely loyal to your parents. Your brother or sister was normally your closest confidant. You know, significantly closer than we think of family even now. You know, if your family member was in debt, it wasn't just their debt, it was yours as well. If they made a big mistake and were viewed negatively by the community, so were you. If they succeeded, then the whole household succeeded. And Paul was saying, you're a member of God's household. So yes, you know, he's at the top, he's head of the household, but automatically, if you're in it, you're in a house with other people. It's not just you and God, you know, having a nice time in some sort of spiritual mansion. You're in a household with other people who are your family, and you have a non-negotiable bond with one another. That's what he was saying. That's what church was and always has been. But I think we tend to forget this. We turn it into something else. The author Francis Chan, who's always good for a provocative quote, says this. We live in a time when people go to a building on Sunday mornings, attend an hour-long service, hour 15 at Maybridge, and call themselves members of the church. Does that sound shocking to you? Of course not. It's what we grew up with. We all know good Christians go to church. But have you ever read the New Testament? Do you find anyone who went to church? The answer is no. People didn't go to church. They were church. It was an identity which meant being family to one another. And so these are really strong ideas. And Paul's not using these as illustrations. He's saying, no, you actually are these things. You are citizens. You are members of this family. Now, there's probably a lot about that. You start thinking about it. That sounds wonderful. You know, you're thinking an eternal people, a tribe to belong to. But it also lays down a big challenge to how we see our relationships and behaviours as a church. We live in a time of loose commitment, keeping your options open, backing off if things get a little bit uncomfortable. And so much as this passage sounds lovely in many ways, it's also a big challenge to how we live. Now, we are fellow citizens, we are part of the same household, but do we act like that's true when we think of each other? Are we actually committed to one another? I've got a few thoughts on that, and I warn you, these are heavy, okay? What being fellow citizens and household members means, okay? First one, committing to a church or a local church community properly for the long term. A natural implication of this passage is that you're supposed to be in meaningful, long-term relationships with other local Christians. When this letter was written, and it was written to Christians in the city of Ephesus, how many local churches do you think there were in the city? There was one. So what happened is, if you were part of that church, if you didn't like something, or you fell out with somebody, or you thought the minister was a plonker, which would never happen, of course, if you were going to be part of God's people in that city, you just had to deal with it. You had to forgive people, or get over the embarrassment of your mistake, or you had to learn to live with that one worship song that you can't stand. And that was no small thing. Churches where people committed to each other in that way eventually changed the world. They did. Here and now, commit yourself to a church and everything that that means. Show up, give time, give money, forgive people, seek the lonely and include them. Include people in your major life decisions. Be on rotors, be helpful. Do the commitment stuff that you know is necessary and you know other people do, and over time you will experience more closeness to people. Time and again, I have observed people who feel like church really is family are the ones who've already committed themselves to it as family. Takes time, but that's what happens. Thing is, the culture we're in tells us not to do this. It tells us to be relentlessly independent and self-sufficient. The author, Fitzsimmons Allison, who's got a silly name, reflected on this and he says, there seems to be some dynamic in us all that resists ever needing or being in any way dependent on one another. It's the cause of much of our loneliness and our shallow and inadequate friendships. The lie is, you don't need anyone. Be totally independent and you'll be happy and at peace. It's not true. But many people buy into it and then you can see they're lonely. The truth is, we were designed for meaningful, consistent, committed, mutual relationships. And when we make compromises on our precious independence to have them, we thrive. And in God's plan, local church with people of all ages and stages and backgrounds is the place to do that. So commit to church. And by that, I mean commit to the people, the family, commit to one another. Second thought on this, considering that, and if you're already a Christian, I mean this, if you're already a Christian, consider that changing churches is like changing families. I'm just going to say this out loud. Worthing, as a town, is quite bad for people hopping between churches. I heard some mutters of noise there. It just is. I've lived in other places. You may not have done, I don't know. It is. And there are some historical reasons for that, I think, in Worthing. But it's not a good thing. Now, we live in a free country, which is good. And real Christianity is not a cult, right? So everyone can and come and go from any church as they please. That's clear that we can do that. And it's good that we're allowed to do that, of course. And if you're not someone here this morning who identifies as a Christian, we want nothing from you. We want to welcome you and tell you about Jesus. There's no pressure. But if you are a Christian and you are part of his family, that needs to be lived out in real life. We've got complete freedom, but I'm talking about how we use that free choice. In our rampantly individualistic culture, we are loath to commit to anything or anyone. We want to keep things at arm's length, keep our options open. Okay, but that doesn't work if you want to have good relationships. If the church is a family and not just a useful institution where you can dip in and out, then you've got to consider which church you're part of very, very carefully. Absolutely. But the author Joseph Hellerman wrote a great book called When the Church Was a Family. I really recommend it. And he says it in one line. A person does not grow up by running from family to family. A person does not grow up by running from family to family. It's vital to be able to say, I'm sticking around at the church I'm part of and giving the best of myself, even if there's stuff I don't like. It doesn't have to be Maybridge. Okay, I want to be clear on that. There are plenty of churches around Worthing, and some of them are nearly as good as this one. Okay? That's a joke. But when we talk about partnership and being committed at Maybridge, this is not just me or anyone else trying to keep you at Maybridge in particular, but I am saying, please put roots in a church and then stay committed. Even if you find someone annoying, or you disagreed with a message, or you're just bored. These would be terrible reasons to change families. They're also terrible reasons to change churches. Now, it's not to say never change churches. Sometimes there are good reasons. There really are. But the best thing to do is to pick one carefully. One that is not just comfortable, but will challenge you to be more like Jesus. And then stick with it. And if you're already at Maybridge, we'd love for you to do that. We'd love for you to stick here, put roots down, commit as your family. Because this relates to my third thing on this. Comprehending the effect that your non-commitment has on other people. What effect does your non-commitment have on other people? Part of the problem of our individualism is that I think we become poor at seeing how our own non-committal behaviours affect others. If you're the sort of person who rarely shows up and doesn't say enthusiastically, yeah, I'll be there, to anything, and pulls out of stuff at the last minute and is just, well, flaky, think about how that affects other people. I know you don't mean to, you've got good intentions, but being non-committal plays with other people's emotions. There's nothing worse than investing time in people, making the effort, and then it's not reciprocated. When we are non-committal, it creates an emotional attrition on the people that are committed to us. Think of it like this. Imagine like a family dynamic. Imagine if your sister, you may not have a sister, imagine you do for the sake of this. Imagine your sister got engaged, okay? And you got to know the guy she was engaged to and you liked him and you put some effort in, some investment, and then after a year they separated and they didn't get married. What a shame. You'd been emotionally invested as if it was a fixed long-term relationship and now he's gone. Now, even if it was a good decision for your sister to break it off, you know, that could be a thing. But what would happen if she got engaged again? Do you invest as much this time? You're probably going to find it harder. What if she keeps doing it? It's disorientating. That's how non-commitment feels to people on the receiving end of it. The reality is, if you see people as fellow citizens in God's family, if you genuinely love other people, you will be committed to them. And that will be evident in what you actually choose to do. Another consideration within this is, and I've always got a mind for this, people who are single. If you're in a traditional nuclear family, right, let's say, your partner, any kids that you have, and you say, well, that's our unit, okay, you know, we're happy, we do our thing, we've got no space to include anyone else beyond the occasional social thing. That leaves out anyone who happens to be single. Those who are not married, those who are separated, those who are widowed, to say nothing of single parents or people who've moved here from another country and have no family and have no other way to experience church. We cannot be serious about being God's people if we have a view that stops with the people who are our blood relations. That's not it. Jesus did not invite us into a family that stopped there. So how far do you go in genuinely treating other people in your church community like family? Would you include the person rejected by their biological family into yours? Would you invite them around on big occasions? Would you make the effort to celebrate their birthday? Would you go with them to a hospital appointment if they had one at 6 o'clock on a Saturday morning and didn't want to be alone? Would you go? I know a lot of us would, okay? Some of these things, you know, including people as family, might sound like sacrifices, or they might sound overly personal. But this is the sort of stuff God's people do, have always done, in order to be in real relationships, to be family. And you know what? Most of the time, making those sort of compromises to our autonomy isn't as hard as you think. It actually becomes more joy-giving than you think it's going to be. Okay, rant over. You'll be glad to learn. Let's hear some great stuff again about God. Back to the text. The amazing thing, this amazing thing about being citizens and part of this household is it's built on the apostles and prophets. It's not just a nice idea, a nice philosophy somebody had. It's what God tells us through those historical people and is in the Bible now. It's not just fuzzy feelings. It's built on something that happened and echoes through history. And most importantly, at the center of it, Jesus is the cornerstone, the one it's built on. If you build a house, the cornerstone was the foundational stone, probably the heaviest, the most dependable stone. And the church, all this church stuff we talk about, is built on him. This great citizenship, this household is built on Jesus. And so sometimes you hear people say, well, you know, I get why church exists, but, you know, it's about community, isn't it? It's looking for a communal feeling and being together. You know, you don't need Jesus. You've got to be just nice to each other. You've got to be nice. No. If you take away the cornerstone, what happens? The building collapses. Doesn't exist. In him, still attached, notice that, in him, the building that we are becomes, Paul says, a temple. Now that was a huge, but to us strange thing to say. Temples in the ancient world were where you had to go to worship, especially for Jewish people. And to go in a temple, you know, usually you had to do some sort of ceremonial cleansing, and usually it was for one ethnicity, and you were better off if you weren't female or poor or disabled. But in Jesus, everyone has access. And more than that, it wasn't just that Jesus gives everybody a sort of spiritual passport to get you into the most exclusive venue. It's more than that. Now, with him, you are the venue. You are the venue. Not only are you clean enough to go in the most prestigious place on earth, you are the most prestigious place on earth. God's presence was now not in a building, but in a people. And so, you know, we're works in progress. We know this from our everyday lives. We're works in progress, but we've already got the seal of approval and then some. Incredible. But look at the wording of this last bit. On one hand, Paul says, in him the whole building is joined together and rises to become a holy temple. But then he says, in him, you too are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. Now, why has he got those two sentences? I think he's making a distinction between the universal and the local. And what do I mean? I think in the first sentence, he's talking about all of the church throughout history. And in the second sentence, he's addressing the people he's writing to, the everyday bog-standard Christians in Ephesus, who are all in this same church group, and he's saying, you guys, you two are being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. It's a big universal truth being brought into the everyday life of normal people in a normal local church. This is so encouraging. When we talk about being family to each other, we can probably think of times where that's not worked very well, where we've failed, or we've had a bad experience of somebody else. And it would become easy, and I've seen loads of this. People get bitter about church, they have a bad experience, someone says something, etc., and so they check out. They withdraw. They stop being around, or they're around, but they're not really in it. But hold on. The joining and the building are not done by us, but in him. Over time, God is crafting us, not individually, but together to be the place where he dwells. Or to put it in another way, we're all over the place. We're a mess, we're patchy, but God is slowly at work, turning us together into something amazing. And so we can say something like this from this passage. We are, as Christians of all times and places, being joined together and on the journey of becoming a temple or dwelling of the Lord. But also, we are, as Christians at Maybridge, being built together to become a dwelling in which God lives by his Spirit. And we need both of these things. We need that reassuring big picture. God is beyond our circumstances. He gives us this great identity. We're his family. He's over history. But we also need to know the local, you and me, here and now. God's people, where, you know, where we live, matters to him too. And that's why we invest in it and we commit to it and we live like family to each other. So to bring us into land, here's another great quote from Joseph Hellerman, who I quoted earlier. And he did a lot of study of church and how people grow. And he said, spiritual formation, in other words, growing as a Christian, spiritual formation occurs primarily in the context of community. People who remain connected with their brothers and sisters in the local church almost invariably grow in self-understanding and they mature in their ability to relate in healthy ways to God and their fellow human beings. And so at Maybridge, we talk about partnership as our way of belonging because it's a way every year of just getting the things that God's called us to out on the table. Partnership is acting out the reality of being fellow citizens and fellow householders. We do it because, like this quote says, committing to one another in community is for the good of everyone. We need it. We can't grow without it. And so as I finish, I'm just going to leave this quote on the screen. And the band are going to lead us again in a few moments. But I'd love, if you're able to just stand with me, that would be really great. Just stand with me. And I'm going to leave this passage on the screen for a few minutes. And during that time, I'd love if a few people would just pray out and pray these words in thanks to God. But also, let's just pray that he would continue to enact this in us as a church. So please, if you feel led, please pray out on behalf of all of us. And then, as I said, the band will lead us further.